What's up, Grizz Nation? Welcome to it's the show. We're talking about the Memphis Grizzlies losing 122-121 to the Los Angeles Lakers. I'm not even going to say anything about the game other than I just talked about the score. I'm going to pass it off to you guys early on because I think everybody and their brother that is listening to this show knows exactly what I'm going to talk about tonight. And if you don't worry, you will get it here in just a little bit. So, Candace, let's go to you first. Number one reason the Memphis Grizzlies lost this game last night to the Lakers.
Coaching. I put everything on the overarching coaching. I think there were some things that Taylor Jenkins did in the beginning of that first half that I think were working, and he sort of went away from it. So, for example, Steven Adams was absolutely dominant. In the first half of that game, and for whatever reason, it just kind of went away from that, despite that, you know, dominant mismatch. Another thing I think they went away from was Jaren Jackson Jr. was the primary. Well, no, actually, they were kind of switching off on LeBron James, both he and Dylan Brooks. But I think between giving LeBron different looks, and that was part of it, but I also just think that Jaren probably, between the two, had the better position. I think he guarded LeBron a little bit better, just in the sense of, no, he wasn't harassing LeBron as much, but because of the size mismatch, LeBron could bump Dylan off his spot and kind of get to where he wanted to go, or, you know, get a foul. But for whatever reason, Taylor Jenkins opted to go with Dylan in the second half completely. I mean, every now and then I'd see a switch on Jaren Jackson Jr. on LeBron, but and even then it wasn't successful. So I don't understand why they went away from that. They decided to put Jaren back in that free safety role, which was not good for him in this particular matchup, because you got veterans in the paint who kind of knew how to draw fouls from him. They knew how to avoid blocks in a way that would get him in foul trouble. And Dylan got in foul trouble just because LeBron could get him off his spot. And so he would ultimately end up in foul trouble as well. You lose both of them. I think that was a critical era. I disagree with rotations. Maybe we can talk about that a little bit later. Some of those rotations weren't good for me. And even that final play, maybe Isaac will have a different opinion. We'll see. But I don't understand why you
have two final play.
Mm. Yeah, 2 point guards on the court, man. And I don't understand why the ball was in Bane's hands. What was the point of 2 point guards if you weren't going to take advantage of having 2 point guards?
This is my biggest issue with that play. Sorry, Isaac. I know I'm talking over you. I'm going to throw it back to you. I don't give a flying crap how good your star player is. Do not care. Michael Jordan is the greatest player to ever play this game. When you're shooting a last second shot as a coach, you don't give your best player the ball and say, go get me a bucket. You draw up a freaking play. And they didn't. They did. There was no screens for him. There was nothing. They got him the ball out on the top of the key and everybody spread out. Go get me a bucket, 12. The defense knew what you were doing. Set a screen, do something, do anything other than go get me a bucket, 12. Yeah. Most of the time, the majority of the time, that may work for you, but in games like this, I think, yeah, the Lakers are way down in the standings, but this is a team that knows how to close games. So you have to close the games. And right there, what Taylor Jenkins done was put the ball in Ja Morant's hands, said, hey, here you go, go do it. And he failed. It was not a terrible look. It was not a great look. If they had drawn up a play, there's no doubt in my mind that you could have got something way better, way more efficient than the look that Ja Morant got. I don't care if you disagree with me. That's fine. You can be mad at me, but that's just my feelings on it.
I actually meant the play where Bane got the ball stolen. But, yeah, that too. I just meant that final play where they had the 7.4 seconds left. And it goes back to your point, though. There wasn't a play ran for that. Because if you look at the screenshot, yeah, Bane's trapped in the corner. But who's his outlet? Like, who was he supposed to be outletting to? Even I knew they were going to trap because – Darvin Ham told the referees that they were going to be trapping. So I could go. I have a lot more to say, but I want to give Isaac an opportunity to chime in there.
Yeah, man, it's just an absolute brutal loss. I mean, just you can't lose that game in that situation. I mean, just situational basketball. I mean, you just talk about everything. 14 missed free throws is a big issue, as Candace said, and you guys have kind of alluded to the coaching down the stretch, several things. You know the saying, let Russ cook. That's exactly what the Grizzlies decided to do last night, man. You keeping Contrar on him. I mean, he was just killing Contrar those minutes, and I think he left and let that go too long. You talk about Jaren and Dylan both guarding LeBron James. I think, like Candace said, I think Jaren did a much better job. Dylan got in foul trouble because, you said, man, keep bumping him off his spots, and he just stayed with that too long. I think he waited too long to bring Steven Adams back in the fourth quarter. Just a lot of stuff, and you talked about that last play, David, well, going to Ja. You see that in when they do these things, like you said, they don't set any screens. They don't do anything. It's just nothing, Ja dribbles to the top of the key and just create something. Like, just do something to get to the basket. And and the team know that. They're sitting on that. They know that's what you're going to, and that's what we saw, man. Brandon Clark got the foul, and I hate those situations because unless it's like a really, really great free throw shooter, like if it had been Tyus or somebody, I would have felt better. I was like, there's no way Brandon's making both of those free throws. I knew he wasn't going to make both of them. But just a tough loss, man. And like I said, people want to talk about the refereeing, the fouls and stuff down the stretch. And there were definitely some questionable calls down there, but they should have never been in that situation for that to even matter. That's the issue that I've been telling people all day. People coming up with excuses. I'm like, man, you're an elite basketball team. You got an inferior team. You're up, what were they up, 8? With, I can't even remember what the time ago, but I think they were up 8. Yeah, like a minute left, you're up 8 points. Yeah, and you end up losing a basketball game. You just can't do that. I mean, you're in a race with Denver, a Denver team who refuses to lose. It's just a tough loss, and you already had a tough 5-game road trip here, and that's, on paper, this is probably the easiest game of the trip, and you drop this one right out of the gate. Now you're looking at this back-to-back at Phoenix, which you know they're going to try to get at you. You kind of beat them up a couple of times. They came in, finished form, beat you up, but you just beat them this week. Back-to-back with Sacramento, they're playing really well. Then you got the Warriors. You know that's going to be a tough one. And then at the Timberwolves, they always want to beat you really bad as well. So it's just not a loss that you want to take. But, I mean, there's a lot of negatives that they can take out of this. A lot of players can look at themselves in the mirror, to the Zinkins coaching staff can look at themselves in the mirror and find fault pretty much all the way around with this game, outside of Steven Adams and Brandon Clark. Those are really the two only guys that outside of that, job with 29 shots, you 9 of 29, not knocking down anything, just continuing to shoot. Dylan was taking some bad shots there late as well. The shot selection was not great. Just a bad loss. I mean, there's no two ways about it. I mean, a lot of people are trying to make excuses for it, man, but this is just a bad loss. I mean, it's one loss. Like you said, it's not in the grand scheme going to kill you or anything, but I think it just brought to light a lot of issues that are sometimes masked when they're in these blowout wins.
Yeah, I think we've been talking kind of off and on about Dylan versus Jaren, Garden, LeBron. I actually had the stats I wanted to see because I was like, I feel like that overall they done a great job guarding LeBron.
Did a pretty good job. Yeah, overall.
He was 2 for 10. LeBron was 2 for 10 when Jaren was his final defender, and he was 2 for 6 from the field whenever Dylan Brooks was his final defender. The thing that I think that Jaren is a better matchup. I know you have to give different looks. I understand that. But when Dylan Brooks was guarding, with Dylan Brooks as the final defender, the Lakers shot 4 for 12 from the field for 33%. LeBron was, I don't remember what he finished, but hold on, I can pull it up right here. I got it. He was 8 for 21. So that's around 40-ish%. He's shooting 51% on the year. So you're seeing a pretty big drop off from him based off of what they were doing defensively. But the Lakers did not make a single three-pointer when Dylan Brooks was the final defender on that three-point attempt. And so I think if you leave him to guard somebody else because of LeBron being able to push him off, there's not many guys that are going to push him off of his marks. LeBron can do that. And so because that matchup is tough, maybe shift him somewhere else. I don't know, with Dylan's mindset, I don't know that he's going to be receptive to that because he wants that challenge. And most of the time he's up for it. He still played 30 minutes last night, but in the crunch time when you needed him, that's when he picks up that last foul and you lose him for that last part of the game. And I think that could have made the difference. Him being on the floor rather than being on the bench for the six fouls could have made the difference whether the Grizzlies win or lose this game.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say real quick, you know, to your point, even if Dylan isn't receptive to that, then stick with the first play, the first half plan. Let them split the time and just continue to do that throughout the game. Because I think there was an advantage in that, just in the fact that LeBron had to continue to keep adjusting from player to player, you know, what his plan. For Dylan, he got a plan and he stuck to it and it worked. You know, you switch him up with Jaren Jackson and that same plan doesn't work. You got to make him work even harder, try to defend two of the top 10, I mean, well, maybe not top 10, but top defenders in this league. And I think that would have been fair. And I think Dylan obviously would have been receptive to that because he was in the first half.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Dylan talked about it after the game that basically his strategy was to make him go left. He said LeBron didn't want to go left, and he was just forcing him to go left all night. But as you said, overall, they did a really good job on him. I mean, his numbers got inflated with the free throws late in the game because I think he only had, I think, I want to say 13, maybe, I don't know, going into the fourth. I mean, he kind of exploded with the free throws. That's why his kind of final numbers look a lot better. Let me see how many free throws did he hit.
6 or 7.
I think a lot of those were probably in the fourth quarter, but yeah. I would say the majority of those were probably in the fourth quarter. I mean, Westbrook is really why they won this game. And I tweeted about this during the game. I mean, what to defend that Lakers offense is like frustrating as hell because they just do a lot of weird stuff. There's like a lot of like Westbrook and Schroeder. They do a lot of like exaggerated dribbling and like the way they move and it's kind of hard to guard because they're like, you never know, it's wild. Like, you don't know where it's going to end up. And a lot of times they end up getting good shots off of that. I'm like, it was so frustrating trying to watch them guard this stuff because a lot of times they do this stuff and they don't even really have a plan. They just do it and you're thinking Westbrook gets in the paint. He's like dribbling hard. You think, oh, well, I got a key in on him. And then he's not really doing anything. And he kicks it out and you're leaving guys wide open. I mean, the perimeter defense has been an issue. And a weird thing about this game is the Lakers are a team. They're, I think, in the top five in pace, but they forced the Grizzlies to try to execute out of the half court a lot in this game. I mean, you would expect these two teams to like to get up and down. You would expect that, but I think Darvin Ham had a pretty good plan in this game to kind of try to slow the Grizzlies down because the Grizzlies had to execute a lot out of the half court in this game, and as we know, they're not comfortable doing that at all. I mean, it's a mess at times when this team has to create offense in the half court because they don't have shooters. It's just not when they're not getting up and down, you're missing, they're getting offensive rebounds, putbacks. When they have to execute in the half court, it's a problem. And that's what it's going to be like in playoff basketball. And I mean, we'll see what happens, but I don't see any improvements from last year. I know Candace has talked about this as well. And for a team that went into the offseason making it an emphasis, saying we're going to draft, we're going to bring in more shooting, we want to be better in the half court, they have not really improved in that area. And I think that's my biggest concern right now as far as if you ask me what the issue is with this team. I think that's the biggest concern because when you get in the playoffs, you get a really good team. They know what the Grizzlies like to do, and they're going to shut that down. I mean, you keying in on a specific team, you know what their weaknesses are in and out, and that's going to be an issue. In order for them to win on a high level, they're going to have to do a better job of executing in the half court. And the question is, do they have the personnel to be any better?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm gonna be hard on Taylor Jenkins today. I will say this. I think he is a good coach. He is, but there are areas with which he needs to grow, and I'm concerned about if he will grow in those areas. And you don't know until it happens. So that is what that is. But yeah, there were a couple other things, you know, in regards to the half court. Yes, they absolutely need more shooting, but he could help out his players a lot more. He can help out those players a whole lot more with actually running sets because after the high pick and roll, just kind of whoever gets the ball.
That's it. Yeah. Just get a bucket. Pretty much. I mean, that's five. Figure it out. Yeah. That's pretty much what it is.
That's it.
Bane took a shot late and I tweeted about it. He got the ball and it was a rushed contested three.
Yeah, I know the shot you're talking about.
And you had the lead there.
I'm like, why? When he's why did you do that?
I don't want to complain about Desmond Bane taking shots.
He's
an unbelievable
shooter
on the team.
Yeah, but I'm like, dude, come on, man. Not that situational basketball.
Yeah, yeah. and I think some of that is youth. The youth is really, while this team is kind of tried and tested, you know, they've kind of been through, you know, they went from the losing the play-in game to, you know, facing the Warrior, like, like they've been through the progression, and I'm kind of getting stuff out of whack there, but you know, they've been through the progression of, okay, they've got some experience, even though they're young, it's still a young team. And that shot that he took right there, it was a bad shot. If he knocks it down, okay, great. Yeah, like that's a three, but it's still a bad shot. It's early in the shot clock. There was no ball movement. The offense did not run. It was him. Very quick release. He has that. That's fine. But it was a highly contested three-point shot, and it definitely ill-advised, in my opinion.
Yeah, and a question that I had was, what happened to the Taylor Jenkins that would ride the hot hand? Because that was a theme. I mean, really, his first 2 years. But this year, it just seems like whoever turn it is whose turn it is. Yeah. That yeah. John Contrar had no business being in that game with 4 minutes.
At all.
No business being in that game. And quite frankly, neither did Zaire. But if you I mean, both of them had issues, really. But between the two, Zaire at least offered you length over John Contrar. It just weird, man. Weird decisions. And like I said, he's progressed in that way. That was one of the things that I used to commend him for, was his ability to ride the hot hand. And this team still has that, you know, it's not ego. It's not. So I don't understand why this rotation has to be this rotation and there's no middle ground. I mean, David Roddy would have been really cool in this game. And he was nowhere to be found. And that's a decision. I feel like last year, I actually feel like we may would have saw a David Roddy. I mean, he's a rookie now, obviously. But I mean, in theory, based off how he used to coach, I don't understand what's changed.
Yeah, it is weird because there have been times this season where he stuck with Roddy when he probably shouldn't have. And now, like you said, I was thinking, where is David Roddy? Like, why is Contrar in the game right now? And we've, like you said, we've seen him do it. We did it with Zaire last year. We've seen him do it sometimes with Roddy. But now it just seems like he's 100% on schedule. Like, whatever the rotation, what this guy normally does, that's what he does. Doesn't matter what's going on in the game, how much you're down by, what you need your star players in the game. They're not coming in until it's time for their rotation time to come in. And I talked about that on the last podcast that we did. It's just, he doesn't really, there's no feel to his coaching. He's very methodical in the way that he approaches the game. And sometimes, man, you can't do the same thing. Games are different. The script is not always going to be the same. And that, I mean, is a concern for, like I said, I know Taylor Jenkins is a young coach, and we have to kind of put it in perspective that this team is still young, but kind of David alluded to, they've been kind of tested now. Like, I don't love that people continue to use the, oh, we're just young, we're young, we're young. Like, how long are you going to use that? Like, I mean, this team was close to being in the Western Conference Finals last year. I mean, they're back at the top of the West now. I mean, they had a play-in game out in Golden State, won that game to go to playoffs. I mean, they've been in some moments. Like, it's not like this is team is super green and they're super young and they haven't experienced anything. Eventually, man, you have to get past that excuse of them being young. I know age-wise they are, but most of these guys that have had some experiences in the league, and I think you got to mature past the just we're young now. I mean, that you can't continue to use that as an excuse for years and years. Especially if you still talk about we're young next year, man, I'm not hearing it at all. Like, that's an excuse that we need to get past.
Yeah, and I'd be fine if we saw a little bit of progress.
I think my point is, and what I was trying, that the shot that Bain took was a shot that a young player takes. Somebody that does not recognize where they're at that moment in the game and they take that shot. I don't think he should be. With the experience that he has at this point in the playoff series and that,
They've been in some big games.
Yeah, like he shouldn't be taking that shot in that situation. Maybe I'm giving him credit because of his age, but that's a youth shot. With the experience he has, he shouldn't be taking it. I agree with you there for 100%.
Yeah, I was shocked when he shot. I was like, what are you doing? Like, I was like, when he first shot, I was like, okay, well, he does make these shots, but when it didn't go in, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, and I mean, plenty of time on the shot clock. I mean, it's just way early. Like, it was just a bad shot, and that's uncharacteristic of him. I mean, this team, a lot of times, man, they execute really well, and last night was just piss poor, like all the way around. Like, pretty much the entire fourth quarter was just terrible execution from the Grizzlies. I mean, just got out coached, and Taylor Jenkins shouldn't be getting out coached by Darvin Ham. Like, that's shouldn't be happening. And we don't talk about him as a coach of the year candidate and everything. And I hate to pile on of Taylor Jenkins because he does a lot of things well. I mean, just the fact that this team is where they are this quickly. I mean, the way that they continue to win when guys are out, the player development. I mean, they do a lot of things fantastically, but I mean, there are definitely some areas where he hasn't really seemed to grow in at all. And Candace kind of said it on Twitter, maybe even regressed in some areas from last year. We kind of talked about as far as keeping a hot hand in the game and going with the hot hand. We kind of saw that last year and here lately, especially in their losses, you really haven't seen that. And it's weird for him to be regressing at this point because, I mean, you expect growth year in and year out, especially when you're talking about a young coach. I mean, you expect to see it to get better and better every year, and you don't expect to see any regression. And I think there has been some regression for Taylor Jenkins. And again, I just hate to pile on because I think I'm a big fan of his and thinks he does a lot of things great, but you just have to call it like it is, and that's what we're seeing. I definitely saw it last night.
I had a question for you guys, something I've been wondering about. I wanted to get you guys' opinion on it. As of this, I've been waiting all year to see if it improves. But as of this year, Ja's been not just normal in the fourth quarter, but like bad in the fourth quarter, like most inefficient in the fourth quarter. And I have kind of a running theory. I know he plays that whole third now, which he never used to do. And I don't know if that affects it, or if I don't know, is that when he runs when he is in the third quarter, he doesn't have as much help. I guess he has to expend more energy. But do you guys have thoughts on that, or do you guys see it that way, or see it differently?
I think some of it is teams. Like after it's Isaac and I were talking about quarterbacks, and I know this is a basketball podcast, but just bear with me. I'll get around to my point. We were talking about quarterbacks. And how you see a young quarterback get starts and have success early. And then once film gets out on them, defenses figure out what they need to do to stop them. And then they kind of come back to earth. Now, Ja Morant, talent-wise, is not like a young quarterback. He's extremely talented. And so it's like this parable is a little bit of a fail in that manner. But I think a lot of the reason that you see kind of that the fall down this year is more because the defenses know it's been the same thing. If you go back and you watch, okay, what are they going to do? They're going to give the ball to Ja Morant and let him create. Now, he is elite. He may be the best player in the NBA at creating space and getting his own shot. But when the defense knows what you're going to do, It makes it so much easier to guard. If you're standing in the batter's box as a baseball player and you know that a fastball is coming, you can set on it and you can smash it. If you're setting back as a defense and you're like, okay, they're not going to set a ball screen. They're not going to run him off of a double baseline screen. They're not going to run a pin down. They're not going to do anything. They're not going to do a set. They're going to get him the ball at the top of the key. He's going to destroy my defender at the top of the key. All we have to do is help and make this shot hard on him. Maybe it falls, maybe it doesn't. But we'll take that. We know that we're going to help because he is going to go to get his own shot. We know that he's going to kill our first defender because nobody's going to stay in front of him. We have to help that guy. That's the recipe to stopping him. In the last seconds, and even not – in the last seconds, like when Ja is taking over the game, they do a lot of isolation ball. And this is not, I don't want any of you guys coming at me saying, oh, well, you're bad mouthing Ja. He is absolutely and freaking incredible. And I've said multiple times on this podcast, he's one of the best players in the league, but even the best players in the league need their teammates to one man cannot beat an entire other team. And I think that, because of the coaching not running the sets, because of the way that they're handling things, you're seeing teams be able to adjust to what he is able to do. And he's still successful. Look at his numbers this year. He's still having success. But I think that number has been brought back down because the film is out on it.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I mean, I think all you have to do, opposing teams have to do, is watch the tape from the Minnesota series last year and saw how Minnesota guarded him. I mean, you just crowd him. And I think people know, like you said, there's not much. I don't know what the word I'm talking to. When the offensively in the fourth quarter, when Ja's going off, it's basically just isolation. It's just basically, I'm better than you. I'm quicker than you. You can't stay in front of me. I'm fearless. I'm just gonna get past you and go to the paint. And teams know that, and they crowd the paint. He's gonna get past that first guy. You're not guarding him one on one, but once he gets to the paint, he just crowds the paint and makes it tough for him. I also think now that he's inconsistent from the free throw line, so that's been an issue. When he gets to the free throw line, he's getting fouled. He's missing free throws. That's been an issue as well. And I just think the film is out on him, and there's not complexity is the word that I was trying to come to. Not a lot of complexity to their offense when they kind of go to the go get me a bucket shot. Pretty much that's what it is. He stands out, dribbles shot clock down, and tries to make a drive to the basket with 4 seconds left on the shot clock. And teams know that's what they're going to do, so they're game planning for that. They're selling out for that. And in those moments, you have to get more. Ja has to get more people involved. Last night, he was just forcing it when it wasn't going, and continued to take shots. And I think on that last play, that's what we saw. I mean, they knew what was coming. It was going a one on one of Ja isolation, and that's exactly what you got. And they were ready for it. He's unbelievable. So a lot of times he's still going to have a lot of success. I mean, you look at his numbers overall, it's still fantastic. But I think when we're talking about those four quarter numbers or quote clutch numbers, I think the reason why they're down is just that I think teams have figured out that they're just going to go to job one on one and they still have to stop it. And I think sometimes he's going to have success. You see some games where he's still able to do that, but teams are going to sell out to try to stop that. And he's so good that a lot of times he's able to still have some success doing it, but sometimes teams are going to be able to kind of bottom them up a little bit. And I think that's what we saw last night and we've seen in some other games this year.
Yeah, I think we've seen Desmond Bane emerge as more of a closer this year.
Yeah, definitely.
In this fourth quarter, Ja was 1 of 7, 0 for 3, and he had 1 assist, 2 points. Desmond Bane, on the other hand, was 2 for 5, 1 of 2 from the three-point line, 7 points. So we've seen him kind of emerge as that guy. And I don't mind that because you want to have two guys that can close. That's ultimately a good thing. You just don't want one to sacrifice the other. And hopefully that can change as the season progresses.
Go ahead, man.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, like sometimes when you see that it's not working, you can't continue to do the same thing. And I think we saw a lot of that last night when Ja realized shots not falling, they're crowding the paint. You got to kick it out, man, and find get some other guys involved. You can't keep forcing it. And I think last night we saw a lot of that, just trying to force feed Ja late in the game. And I mean, that's just not a recipe for success. I mean, I know he's awesome, and I know you want your star player to make these amazing plays, but sometimes, man, you got to just realize, okay, man, this tonight is not working. Like, we got to do something different. And I thought last night he just continued to – there was a lot of bad shots from him. There's no question about it. I hate to pile on Ja. We know he's awesome. We all love him. We know how special he is. But just a lot of, I think, forcing stuff last night that when he really shouldn't have.
Yep.
I think at the end of the day, you want the ball in your best player's hands in those crunch time moments. So in the fourth quarter, you want Ja Morant with the ball in his hands. But you build a team. When you're a GM, you're looking at these pieces and you're like, okay, these are my core pieces, and I'm going to look to find pieces that plug in well next to this guy. So you build a team around the guy in order to have success. So use those pieces. There's still some things I think that we all agree that there's something missing here. That and maybe that piece is Danny Green. I don't know if you all saw the clip of him warming up. You know, shooting threes there at the crypto.com, the Staples Center. It's been the Staples Center forever. I'm sticking with it. But, you know, he was putting up shots. And so then you get the questions, when is he coming back? Maybe Danny Green is that piece. Maybe Danny Green is that wing defender that can shoot the three that makes the difference in the half court for them. But you have to – you want Ja making the decisions, but you want other guys around him that can make those shots. And there were plenty of times where Zaire, I don't know how, let me look, I'll pull up the box score here, but Zaire had a couple of wide open catch and shoot threes, and it looked awful, man. It looked like a right-handed person was trying to shoot a three left-handed with a blindfold on.
He missed one so bad. I was like, man, yeah. And Zaire, then, what's yeah, up? What's going on, man?
There was one that Santi missed, and I'm like, whew.
Yeah.
What was that? So you need your role players to be just that. Like, they have to fit in their roles. And we've been fairly negative because this was just a brutal loss. There's still a ton of positive, right? They just came off of an 11-game win streak. They're a half game back for first place in the West. There's still plenty of basketball. Like, there's a lot of area between now and the playoffs for this team to grow. But these games sting. They should have won this game. This should have been a team record 12 wins in a row. They should be moving on to their next game with an opportunity to win 13 in a row. And because of issues closing, we've discussed closing on the podcast. We think that that's an issue for this team. It's crazy. It shouldn't be, because you have Desmond Bain with ability to do that. You have Ja Morant with ability to do that. You have Jaren Jackson with ability to do that on the defensive end of the floor, and Dylan Brooks with ability to do that on the defensive end of the floor. So you have guys, you have the pieces to make that happen. But closing has been an issue for them this year, whether that's it's them getting a big lead and then letting other teams come back. Or you look at this game that ended up getting close. You missed some free throws late. A lot of errors in last night's game. I didn't even mention the referees. You, what's the total free? 81 free throws last night between these two teams. And then that's insane. There should never be 81 free throw shot in an NBA game. They were blowing the whistle entirely too much. But I think that they have a couple guys that can be in the right places, that can play the role. But you have to have somebody orchestrating. You have to have the coaching staff saying, this is what we need to do, and not just, here it is, go out and get your shot. Because at this level, you're not going – you can win in the regular season like that, but you will not win a championship playing the game like that.
Absolutely not.
In the first round playing like that.
Yeah, but, I mean, as bad as they've been in a half court, you get the wrong matchup. I mean – I'm not gonna say this team's gonna lose in the first round, but we saw last year against Minnesota how much trouble they had in that series, and that series could have easily went the other way. Like I know it ended up being with 4-2, but that series was a lot closer. I mean, the Grizzlies had to come back and win a lot of those games. I mean, Minnesota had them on the ropes in a few of those games, and the Grizzlies were able to pull out. But another thing that they still don't do a good enough job of taking advantage of mismatches with Jaren. Like, I don't get it. Like, I don't – you see what he can do offensively, and it's just like they don't want him plays for him. Like, I don't understand that. I mean, he's pretty much unstoppable in most matchups. I mean, they don't call him a unicorn for nothing. Like, you see some of the things that he does, man. He's unguardable at times, and they just don't run the plays for him. It's been better this year than it's been in the past, but it's still not even close to where it should be.
8 field goal attempts from last night.
Like, I don't understand that, man. He's too talented. I mean, we know what he does on a defensive end, and people get on him for his offense. But I mean, he can score. It's not him. He's just, you got to get the attempts, but you got to scheme for him to get more shots. And that's just hasn't been an emphasis on this team. And that's still probably the biggest question that I've had offensively for this team. That's been the biggest one. It just seems like they don't value him offensively, and I don't understand why. I don't get it.
Him and Steve almost had the same amount of attempts. Steve had 7. Meanwhile, Dylan Brooks had 17, second highest on the team, more than Desmond Bain. It's crazy.
And you don't need that. You know, we talked about Dylan's value and what he brings to this team on the defensive end of the floor, but he doesn't need to be your second and shot attempts, especially on a night when he's not shooting the ball.
That's what I'm saying. There are nights where he's cooking. And on those nights, okay, take the shots. But he takes them in most games. I don't care whether he's on or not. And that's just not what you want from him. He should be defense first all the time. If he gets in the game, you see he's knocking down his shots. Okay, you can take a few more. But last night, like, he was just missing front rim and shots, even front rim one from the free throw line. And I'm like, that's not something to use to see for him. And he was all the way off last night and just continued to shoot. And that's just not what you want. I mean, and he said, even on the nights where he's playing well, I still don't know if he should have more shots than Desmond Bane. Like, that's just not the structure, the way this team is structured. That shouldn't be the case. And last night, again, that was bad Dylan last night. That's what we got.
And I would say
on the offensive end.
Dylan has been doing better in that regard, especially when you know, our new big three, when they play, he had been doing better to this point.
Yeah, his usage was down.
Went off. One thing I noticed, though, especially in last night's game, it wasn't all Dylan taking bad shots. They give the ball to Dylan a lot, especially when they're facing half court situations. Ja would just bring it out of court and give it to Dylan, like, a lot. And Dylan would miss. Some of them were wide open. Some of them were ill-advised shots. I'm not going to take that away. And I wonder, you know, his chemistry to feed Dylan. I know they play a lot in the first and third, so maybe they have something to do with it in terms of rotation, where Ja just doesn't get that chemistry and with it. He doesn't play with Dez and Jaren as much, maybe. But it is something I noticed, that it wasn't just Dylan taking the ball. Sometimes I was like, don't give him the ball. I understand why before we run a set, we're just passing the ball to Dylan. And that's what they did. Especially
if you give it to him, it's going up. Like, he's going to do his little dribbling. He's going up, man. That shot's going up if you give it to him. So that's an interesting point. Just stop giving him the ball. Maybe that'll help. Because if he gets it, man, he shot at me. He's going to put it up. But and the thing about it, I hate to pile on Dylan, because he's so important to this team on the defensive end and the effort that he puts in for this team, and they feed off of him. But you just can't have him missing all these shots and continue to shoot. But like you said, man, maybe that's the strategy. I don't know. But Ja does have a tendency to favor him. Like Candace said, especially in half-court situations, because he just gets the ball and they just get out of the way and let him cook, I guess. He creates, because he can create, but the thing about it is the shots have to fall. And a lot of times they're not. Last night they weren't.
Yeah.
So I can't do this show. I know that we've mentioned a little bit, but I can't not talk about free throws. You guys know that's my thing.
Thank you, Bell.
And this is a perfect example of why they are so important. 26 of 40, 65% from the free throw line. They're the worst free throw shooting team in the league right now.
And
go ahead and holler at me and say, well, they got Steven Adams.
People always say that, but it's
take
not
his
just
numbers
Steven
out, dude. You take Steven number here. I wrote it down. I've done the math because I know that somebody, well, they got Steven Adams. He's the worst shooter in the league. You're absolutely right. Take his numbers away. They're 776 out of 1,030. That's 75%. They're still in the bottom five in the league. Yeah. If you remove Steven Adams from the team, it's the entire team. It's not just Steven Adams. Ja Morant's getting to the line a ton. He missed a lot of free throws last night. He missed, I'm sorry, he missed two free throws last night. Jaren missed one. Steven missed five. Brandon Clark missed four.
Yeah, Sonny missed a few.
Two. Like, you can't miss 14 free throws. Yeah, there were nine free throws missed not named Steven Adams. And you just can't have that. I think I worry about that. That's one of my largest concerns for this team, is that they're going to get to the playoffs and they're going to lose a game, a critical game in a series, because of their inability to make free throws.
I mean, you missed 12 instead of 14, you win the game. You're terrible. You missed 12 and you win the basketball game. People were talking about last night, oh, well, they missed 14. That was mostly Steven Adams. You take Steven Adams off, the rest of the team combined, they still only shot 71%. So it ain't just Steven Adams. Steven is bad. There's no question about that. But this is a pretty much a team effort with this. I mean, we've seen games where even they're good free throw shooters. Tyus Jones has missed some this year. Bane is gone. I remember a game he missed like four in a row or something. Desmond Bane did. It's like it's contagious. When you see those guys start missing, seems like the whole team started missing. And David said, man, you can't go in the playoffs shooting 71% in the low 70s. From the free throw line. Like, it's just, you're going to lose basketball games because teams know that. I mean, we've even started to see the the Hacker Adams. I mean, they're putting it on the foul line. People know that this team struggles shooting from the free throw line. And when you're in close basketball games, those points matter. When you're playing against good teams, you need every point you can get. You just can't waste 14 points like that. Like, even against a bad team, we saw that last night, how much that cost them. I mean, you missed 12 instead of 14, you win in basketball games. And that's, and even 12 is terrible. Missing 12 would have been much better. So, yeah, I mean, that's an issue. The free throw shooting, half-court offense, I think those are two huge concerns, and those are paramount, both of those things, when it comes to playoff basketball.
To that point. Just
get Lee, I mean, get move about middle of the pack, man. If you get to where they're shooting 78.
You know, yeah, man, give me 78, like 79.
77, 78, 79%.
Man.
That's a pretty big difference in what you're scoring on a night-to-night basis.
Yeah, it's another area with which I feel they've regressed for sure. But a lot, the Lakers got a lot of flack for fouling like Bane and fouling Tyus when they did. And I get that criticism. But if you look at it overarching, they're a bad free throw. They're the worst free throw shooting team in the league. If you're playing the numbers, then the likelihood that somebody's going to miss, it really is just Hacker Grizzly. I mean,
yeah, I was like, Kendrick Nunn got the memo. Kendrick Nunn got the memo for sure.
Yeah, it's just Hacker Grizzly. Like, just foul somebody and see if they make it.
Man, he was just fouling everybody. He's like Oprah out there.
but seriously, I mean, it was bad fouls. I'm not arguing that it wasn't, but there is an argument to be made. I mean, if this trend continues, just foul somebody. And the likelihood they're going to miss at least one is high at this rate.
I mean, it really is. But like I said, even our guards, like guys that have good percentages, there have been times, like I said, I was talking about Tyus and Bane have missed several free throws in games. It's just, it's weird. It's almost like it's contagious. I don't know what it is, but I don't, outside of Steven Adams, when you look at the personnel on this team, there is no reason for them to be that bad from the free throw line. Like, I don't know what it is. Jog, we know how much work he puts in. Like, why is he struggling that much from the free throw line? Like, I don't understand. We got guys that can shoot. Santi is a shooter. I know people talk about where they on the move, and that's a set shot. But you're professional players, man. I've never gotten how NBA players can be so bad from the free throw line. I don't get it. And I know they work on it. I'm sure that's something that they have put an emphasis on in practice. But for some reason, it's just not translating the games, man. I don't know, but it's something that you can't be any worse than the league. Like, there, the personnel on this team, there's no reason for them to be the worst free throw shooting team in the league. Like, I don't believe that.
And maybe in Ja's case is that he's tired, and maybe he needs to practice more when he's tired. Like, because sometimes that's just what you got to do. Like, it's great to practice free throws and at 10 o'clock in the morning, you know, when you're up and you got all this energy. But it is different, you know, when you're in an in game situation, and maybe that's what the disconnect is. I don't know, but it's something. They need to try that. Try something different, because whatever drills they got going right now ain't working.
I was going to say one thing. I was going to say real quick. One thing with Ja from the free throw line, to me, it doesn't seem like he always shoots them the same way. His form is not consistent from the free throw line. Like, he, and I've noticed that before, and I was thinking maybe it's just me, but it doesn't seem like he always has the same lift on his shot the way he shoots it. A lot of that, I guess that could be tired. I mean, his usage is so high. Like, you put him on the free throw line late in games, a lot of times he's just made some crazy athletic play at the rim, and then he's going straight to the free throw line. A lot of that might have to do with it, but it doesn't seem like he's super consistent with his form or his arm angle when he shoots free throw.
I haven't caught that. I have to kind of pay attention.
Yeah,
to that
it's,
a little
it's,
bit more.
It's something I noticed. Yeah. It's light, but I noticed it more, especially when he's tired.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think it might just be that he's just tired. Because again, most of the time when he's going to the free throw line, he's just jumped up and got fouled by three people, like, and ran into a wall. So I'm sure he's tired by the time he's going to the line, because he's making these super athletic plays at the rim and getting knocked out of the air and stuff. And so, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with it. But yeah, it does seem like he just has different lift on his shot at different times. Sometimes it's super smooth. Sometimes it's just kind of like he just kind of throws him up there sometimes. So I think a lot of that could have to do with his fatigue level.
Yeah. Man, his free throw percentage is down from last year. He's shooting more free throws. To me, I think that would be the number one area that I would want to see growth from him, because of the way that he plays, you know that you're going to get to the free throw line.
Yeah, he's got to knock down shots from the free throw line because he's going to get fouled.
Yeah, and big games, it's gonna make a difference. It's gonna matter, and you know, moving that from the 74% up to closer to 80%, what would be a bump in scoring, and I think it adds a couple wins to this team pretty easily if he's shooting 80% from the free throw line. And I know that that's a big growth, but it's also not impossible. You know, there are guys that you can, you know, you got guys on the coaching staff. There are shooting coaches. There are a lot of things that you can do to work on improving your game. Maybe that is kind of something that he's working on. And, you know, he does a lot of his work in the dark. So I'm not trying to imply that that's not something that he's putting time in on. But maybe the fatigue thing is something, you know, like he needs to wait. Because I know a lot of times – I would go out and the first thing I would do is start shooting free throws, just kind of get the rhythm down a little bit. And like, okay, I knocked down about 6 or 7 free throws in a row, and now I'll start moving around. And your muscles are different after you've played 30 minutes and been knocked to the floor and bumping and banging the entire game. There's a massive difference than 2 minutes into the first quarter taking your free throw and 30 seconds left in the game after you've been in a war.
Yeah. That's for sure. That's for sure. Well, I think it's possible, David, you mentioned that 80%. I mean, he was shooting at the beginning of the year. We've seen it. They didn't last that long, but we have seen it. So I think he's putting in the work, but even as the season goes along, it seems to have kind of decreased.
Yeah, he's streaky. I mean, I talked about that a lot last year. It's usually one or the other. It's usually not a lot of in between. Usually he's at a point where he's making them all, or then there's other times where he's several games where he's missing them. And that's just seems to be the case. And I don't know what it is, but again, man, it can cost you when you get in these close games in the playoffs. You have to be able to knock them down. And I mean, that's the issue. It's going to be, that's kind of the question mark about Steven Adams when you're in the playoff game. Do you keep him on the floor? Do you take him off the floor? Because I mean, there's the offensive rebound and things that he does are big for you, but you know teams are going to foul him, put him on the free throw line. And if you can't knock him down, it kind of makes it hard to play him in those situations. So, that's a concern for this team, I think, all the way around. And a lot of people try to just blame it on Steven Adams. It's not just Steven Adams, man. This is a team issue when it comes to their free throw shooting.
I have a player as an example that went from a poor free throw shooter at high volume to an above average free throw shooter at high volume. That's Brandon Ingram. And his 3 seasons with LA, he shot 62%, 68%, 68% on 3 attempts, 5 attempts, 6 attempts. When he went to New Orleans, put in work in the offseason, 6 attempts a game, 85%. The year 2 in New Orleans, 5 attempts a game, 88%. Year 3 in New Orleans, 6 attempts a game, 83%. And then this year, he's been injured. He's only played 15 games, but he's shooting 5 attempts from the free throw line at 87%. So it's not unheard of for a player to make a jump. 5% is a big jump, but it's not impossible for him to do. Ja Morant has the talent. Whether we ever see that jump happen or not is yet to be seen. I don't want to keep harping on free throws. I think we've covered it. And I know that you were coming in with something else that you want to say, so I'm not going to try and close it before you get a chance to say what you need to say. So go ahead, Candace.
Yeah, well first, can you find that coach from Brandon Ingram? Can we find that coach?
I bet we can
look at we need him.
I guarantee you, if we put that out on Twitter, that somebody will know exactly who that is, and maybe even one of our listeners will know who that is. But yeah, like it can be done.
I need a name. Okay. No. What I was going to say was, you know, looking at schedule down the stretch, they're going to have a really tough March and April. And I'm really excited for that stretch because they're going to have to play a lot of, like, the Warriors back-to-back, Dallas back-to-back, a lot of tough teams, half-court type teams, or you know, playoff at least, type teams that expose the Grizzlies' weaknesses. And I think by the time they get to the playoffs, we're going to know what kind of team this is. We're going to know if they're going to be ready to compete or not. By the time they go through that gauntlet, this may be a very unpopular opinion, but honestly, if it was up to me, I wish every team would play the Grizzlies like that. I know it's not as fun. I know they don't get up and down the court and now it's high flying dunks, but man, it would force Taylor Jenkins' hand. And maybe March and April will be enough, but I would love nothing more to start that now. Like, have these teams force the Grizzlies into a half-court offense, force Taylor Jenkins to come up with something, more versatile lineups, different rotations, all of it, just so they can really get the practice, because I think from the top down, they're going to need that experience, and the experience that they've gotten so far just doesn't seem to be enough. They'd see more regular season stuff like that. We'll see if it happens.
If they have real designs on winning the championship, man, they're going to have to. That's what it's going to take. You got to make free throws, and they're going to have to be able to execute out of the half court. You just have to. You're not going to win a championship playing up and down basketball. It's just not going to happen. Because teams are going to scheme to slow you down, and if they're making shots, that makes it even harder. And you're not, when you're playing a really good team, they're not going to be missing a ton of shots all the time where you can just get the ball and run. It's just not going to happen in the playoffs, and just got to be better. Tough stretch, like Candace said, down the stretch, they're going to play a lot of teams, and I'm sure these teams are going to be jockeying for positions. So, I mean, you got the Pelicans late, and you all already know that's going to be a big game down in New Orleans. I think they play Boston late as well. You got the Warriors twice. You got, I think, three with Dallas, I want to say, in a short period of time. So, yeah, I mean, we're gonna figure out what kind of team this is down the stretch, and hopefully by the end, man, they have time to work through some things, and they'll be playing the top basketball, because that's what you want going to the playoffs. But man, you've got to see it.
And like David hinted, looks like they might have Danny Green. He might want to start taking bets on when he's going to come back. I mean, I was really surprised to see him in shoot around. I know he's been doing 5-on-5, but I thought they may have him doing that for like a month.
Yeah, he said post All-Star break, but looking at that last night, it looked like it might be even earlier than that. From the way he was looking last night, it looked like he might be close to ready to go. Like, we know how cautious they are. But last night, it looked like, honestly, that he might be able to play. So we'll see. I mean, I think if he's healthy, he could be big for this team down the stretch. I mean, that's a trade addition. But like I said, I've always taken a wait and see approach with him, because he's 35. He's coming off a ACL, LCL, not even a year removed, because this happened in the playoffs last year, and we're talking January, February. So it's not even been a year. I mean, he's not a guy that's super athletic and going to be doing anything crazy anyway. But man, those are tough injuries to come back even for a young guy. So for a guy 35, that's tough. So I'm gonna take the wait and see approach. Hopefully he is able to contribute, but a lot of people are putting these expectations on him, like he's gonna come in and be the savior. I'm not quite there yet.
Nah,
it's gonna affect lateral movement, man. You know,
people are thinking like
he's not gonna be he's not an explosive guy. So it's like, oh well, he's not gonna be as explosive. Well, Danny Green, I don't know that at any point in his career you would give him that kind of moniker, but you know, to be the defender that Danny Green is,
he's got to be
quick laterally. And if that's not 100% healthy, you definitely don't want to rush him back.
Yeah, because you hear people like the fan base, and when they talk about him, there's a lot of people expecting like he's going to come in and average 15 points a game or something. The way they're talking about him, and I'm like, man, pump the brakes on that a little bit, man. Those are two traumatic injuries, and this guy is 35 years old. Like, I love what he's doing, being in the locker room and everything, but like if you mention like possibly moving him in a deal for even talking about Gary Trent, like I think Danny Green is better than Gary Trent. I'm like, bro, I mean, you just hear some wild stuff, man, when you talk to people. Like I said, I hope he comes in and is at peace, because they could really use that shooting. I think his ability to shoot and play defense, if he's right, will definitely help them, because he's a playoff battle-tested player, and he's the type of, when you look at this team weaknesses, if he's healthy, he can fix some of those issues or help fix them. Anyway, so we'll see. But looks like he's close to being on the way back, man. Look like he's moved around pretty well last night, and when they saw the video pregame.
They generally don't let players do, well, at least when Desmond Bane's case, it was like a week or a half maybe after we first saw him do shoot around. I'm sure it'll be a little bit longer than that just because of the injury he's coming back from, but I mean, I expect for him to look piss poor for at least about a month and a half when he first comes in. But maybe by the time they get to that March, April stretch, maybe we'll really get a glimpse of what he can provide for the team.
Well, I know not last year, but the year before when Jaren was coming back from his injury, we got to see him warming up pregame quite a few times. Like it was, he was warming up pregame.
It's like early. In January.
Yeah. And then like it didn't come back for a while. And so it was, I don't know. I would love it if he came back sooner rather than later, because you need to build chemistry on the court with the guys and you need to get in basketball shape. So sooner rather than later would be great, but I'm also not going to get my hopes up, because in the preseason media day, all indications were post All-Star break.
I thought he said pre.
He did himself. I think he was on a podcast.
Oh, did it?
He said pre. The understanding from training camp was that it was going to be post All-Star break, but he's been saying lately pre All-Star break. I think you said on ESPN the other day, he was talking like it could be
a
week from now.
Weeks,
so
man. Yeah,
that's the way he was talking. So we'll see. I mean, they could definitely use him. Like I agree with Candace. I don't think he's just going to come out and be some revelation coming off that injury. But a lot of people seem to think that, like, they're super against even the thought of that you could bring anybody else in that could give you more than he's going to give you this season. Like, I don't know. I'm waiting to see. I'm hoping that he can do that, because skill set wise, he can. We just don't know if he is still that guy, or can he be that guy with the short amount of time that he'll have left to kind of get into game shape and kind of work his way in with this team.
But I don't know. This front office has been different with injuries. I'm sure you guys maybe heard about Desmond Bane. His toe still is, like, he's just playing on it.
Yeah. I mean, he said it's a pain tolerance type thing.
Yeah. Like, my understanding is, like, possible surgery in the off season.
Yeah. And that's my question. Is it something that he can make worse or re-injure? That's been my question about it, because it seemed like it would be, but you wouldn't think that they'd just be playing him wide regularly with big time minutes if that was the case. But it just seems like, I've done some research on the injury, and the fact that it's still painful and he's probably going to have off-season surgery, it seems weird to me that him playing on it wouldn't have any effect on it. Maybe it doesn't, but it just seems weird to me. That's one concern I've had, and I've talked about it on Twitter, and people are like, oh, you're just being negative, he's fine, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, man, that's, if he goes down, that's catastrophic for this team. So you don't want him to re-injure that, so it would have to end up being out for the rest of the year, then, because you got a big time problem then.
Yeah, as cautious as this team has been,
but that's what I'm thinking. Like, there's no way.
Stuff, are they as cautious as they used to be? Is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer that, but I'm gonna try
everybody
to be glass half full on this one and be like, hey, as cautious as they have been with everything else, hopefully they're being that cautious with that. And it's just something the doctors have told them. Hey, he can go out there and play on it. When we get in there and we have to do surgery, there may be some extra stuff that we have to do, but he's not really going to do any more damage to it. Let him go play. Like, nothing.
The big three is getting the jaw treatment now. The whole big three. We saw Jaren come back way early than the time.
Yeah, because I was surprised that Jaren came back as early as he did. I didn't expect that at all. I thought for sure we were talking Christmas, January with him, and he came back quickly. It's usually in years past, it's just been job, but it does seem like with the big three now that they're treating those guys differently. Because you see some of the stuff that's happened with Ja in the past. If there was anybody else, they would have been out 3 months. Like, there's no way. And Ja's coming back in the same game. He's back in. I'm like, it's crazy. Like, I remember that ankle injury he had. What was that last year? He's back in like 2 games. I think he had one this year and last year.
Came back with high tops on. He wore high tops for about three games.
About three games. He's right back to the wreck, to the mid.
My guy missed one game and came back. I was like, what?
Because people thought he was going to be missing like weeks. This man came back like missed one game. It's like, man.
They escalated. I'll never forget how fast they escalated the injury report.
Yeah.
He went from out to like the same day.
Yeah. It was nuts. All right, guys. I think we're good. We'll go ahead and wrap this up. You can get the show on Twitter at Ethos Grizzlies. I'm at NBA D-Will 21.
You can find me at Twitter at Candace H901. Isaac, take us out.
Yeah, man, the Grizzlies continue this 5-game road trip with a weird, man, they play the Suns. This is the second time this week and the fourth meeting. It's kind of been a weird series. The Grizzlies go to Phoenix, blow them out. Phoenix comes to Memphis, blow them out. And then the Grizzlies earlier this week blew them off the floor back at FedEx Forum. So this is going to be the fourth meeting for this series for the year. The Grizzlies can win the season series 3-1 with a victory. They've also missed Devin Booker in all four games, which has been weird. This has been a weird series overall for them this year, but hopefully they can win that series 3-1. Tough back-to-back on Monday with Sacramento. Then you got the big one with the Warriors on Wednesday. You close out the road trip Friday at the Timberwolves, which is, I'm sure for them, they kind of still look at the Grizzlies as a rivalry. I don't know if the Grizzlies kind of look at them that way, but they're going to play super hard in that game. So four tough games coming up, man. We'll see if they can bounce back after a really tough loss last night. But you can find me on Twitter at Isaac_NBA, ISAAC_NBA. We'll definitely be back either tomorrow, Sunday night, or early next week with a post game following the Suns game. Or maybe we'll do a two-parter with the Kings game as well. So be on the lookout for that. So Grizzly, for David, Candace, Silas Simpson, until next time, keep going.
And that will conclude our Sports Ethos presentation.